So I think my job is supposed to be to bring up the rear as the one of the practices who are actually in the program. So you heard about sort of the AMA's big picture, what they were trying to do. You heard about the YMCA and how they got the funding. We were one of the recipients of the groups of people who got the funding. So our practice was one of three of the groups of practices in the state of Delaware who actually benefited from the grant. And so we just wanted to sort of share our experience with you all just so that you had some understanding of sort of how that went. A lot of the folks who are on this project are in the room and listed on the slide, but there were a huge team of people who actually worked together to make this happen in our practices, which is really exciting. For those of you who don't know, Christiana Care Health System is a fairly large health system. It's located in Delaware, and we're based out of two locations, one in Wilmington and one in Newark. It's about 1,100 beds. We also have an associated medical group, which has several practices based both in Delaware, but also in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey. Our practices are actually both based in Wilmington, Delaware. So we get a pretty decent mix of folks, both from the inner city, but then also from the sort of suburban area. Our practices are based out of a residency program, so we actually have a pretty decent mix of academics, but then also clinical care, which makes it very helpful for projects like this. But it also makes it somewhat more challenging because it means the number of providers is significantly larger than what you would normally see. And so we'll explain to you sort of how we address that. I always tend to err on the side of listing disclosures because I'm never really sure what things people consider important. So I'm employed by Christiana Care Health System, which potentially is a thing that you might care about. I also am on a few advisory boards. Most of them are supporting the things that we're talking about, so I don't think it's an issue, but I feel like I should still tell you about it. And I actually do get paid to give presentations for the American Academy of Family Physicians on obesity and diabetes care, which also is still promoting these actual same kind of things. So our big objective today is sort of to describe sort of the initiative from our perspective, explain the steps that we took, and then discuss some opportunities that you may choose to implement back at your site. So I won't go back and tell you the big stuff that you've already heard before because I had the benefit of seeing their slides ahead of time. But just to sort of remind you that this was supposed to be a collaborative approach that wasn't just sort of the practice by itself trying to sort of take it all on its own. And instead, it was what I would consider a big team. The team included Christiana Care, but not just in our practice. We actually used our whole department. So we're very fortunate to be embedded in a Department of Family and Community Medicine, which means that we had community medicine partners literally baked into our own practice, which is very helpful. The AMA, who came out and gave a large number of presentations for us and were very helpful in being collaborative. The Y, who were able to bring us the money and the program. One of the interesting things about when we first started this project is that in our practice, when we were doing our patient-centered medical homework, we'd actually partnered with the Y before, and we never could get patients to show up. And so we were curious as to how this was going to work and how this was going to be any different than sort of the things we tried in the past. And we were really excited that sort of the work that we did in this project actually made a difference compared to what we'd done kind of on our own. We also partnered with the Department of Public Health in Delaware because there were other practices not Christiana Care based that were located across the state that were participating, and so the department was involved. And of course, patients, who we really needed them to be engaged and involved. So a collaborative approach. Each practice was allowed to sort of decide how to implement it best in their system. So Omar and Janet showed up with a huge number of tools, and they basically said, here's what we have to offer you, and here's the support we have. How do you want to use it in your practices? And so, you know, being the academicians, what we did was sit down and really give some thought to what will we need. So how did it not work the last time? What will we do different this time? And if we were going to really take it to the next level, what are the things we would have to put into place? And we really came up with a three-pronged approach that I actually think was really successful. So one part of it was education, one part was identification, and third was referral. And so I'll go in more detail on the next slide about each one of them, but I think all three really contributed to what our big goal was sort of increasing patient participation. And so we were going to consider ourselves successful if we just got more patients to show up for the very first session for the YMCA, because we had actually failed in doing that in the past on our projects. And so we actually were really super excited when you see some of the numbers, because we got them to not only show up for the first session, but to actually stick around, which is pretty cool. So I sort of divided up this slide, and out of all the ones that I think I'm going to show you, I think this might be the most practical one for people who may want to employ the same type of thing in their practice back home, because it sort of, in one place, put all the strategies that we sort of threw together. So the first part was education. So I told you we had sort of three areas. For the education piece, one of the things that we found was that the providers were generally aware that the YMCA had this program, but really had no idea whether or not it mattered, whether or not they cared. And because we are at a residency program, the residents like to challenge you about data, and they really wanted to know, like, what's the evidence behind whether or not this actually even works. So it was super awesome when we got to have Omar Hassan come and actually lead an informal journal club and walk through the actual literature that based all of this program on it and show them that it actually did have statistical significance and it did make a difference. And it was like light bulbs went off because people suddenly realized that they had an intervention that wasn't a medication but actually was going to make a difference. And so they were very excited about that. In our practice, because we are in multiple different sites and we have so many different providers, we have a quarterly practice retreat where we bring together all the staff and all the providers together in one location. And we tend to use it for our education, but then also things like business meeting and things like that. And so we actually had Omar and Janet come and actually spend a good period of the morning with us, sort of going through the same things that they showed you about the burden, about the tools themselves, and about how we could apply that. And they also had a chance to re-meet our folks from the YMCA in our local area, just so they sort of put a name to a face and kind of had an understanding of what was going on. We also have an electronic newsletter that goes out at least once, but sometimes twice a month. It goes out to everybody in the practice. And so we made it a point to make it one of our standing items in the electronic newsletter to remind everybody that A, this existed, B, that they could print off any of the things that we'd share with them before, but then C, just to keep it sort of on the front of their burner, because as you can imagine, in a primary care practice, QI projects tend to fall off and new ones show up, and so sometimes it gets a little bit lost. And then finally, we actually had, at the time that we were doing this initial project, a CDE, a certified diabetes educator, who was embedded in our practice. But his whole focus was actually on people who already had diabetes, and we had never actually asked him to engage anyone who had pre-diabetes. And so we actually used a column that he was writing for us at the time about sort of diabetes topics for the practices, or sort of teaching you about things that you probably didn't know. And he wrote a whole column on the pre-diabetes program and how you can actually help folks by sending them to this program, which was really helpful. And that actually got coverage not just in our practice, but across the department and actually across the medical group, because by that point they were being read by people, not just us. From the patient side, we found that they actually also needed education, so that pre-diabetes was a term that sort of fell into favor and fell out of favor, and nobody really knew what it meant. And so we wanted to make sure that we sort of had everybody speaking the same language. And we had the opportunity to do this in a lot of different ways. The easiest ones were through flyers and brochures and sort of posters that we had up in the office. I think the most fun part was that we had Diabetes Day at one point, and we got our Y t-shirts and our buttons that you saw, and I think it was Omar's slide, so they had the Ask Me About Pre-Diabetes buttons, and so everybody kind of got to wear jeans, so they were excited, but they got to wear their Y t-shirt, which made the Y happy, and we had the Ask Me About Pre-Diabetes, which made Omar happy, so at the end of the day, everybody was happy. So we got a lot of information up, and we actually had a lot of people ask questions about it. For no other reason, why does everybody have on jeans and a t-shirt today? So it's kind of cool. We also used the opportunity to sort of address our EMR as a place where you could potentially put in patient education, so that there was actually the ability to make a quick text so that in your now required patient education information you have to hand out for meaningful use, you could actually do a quick text that would actually put in information. So if you thought the person had pre-diabetes, you wanted to remember to talk to them about it, or you just wanted to remind them about it, you know, with a couple of keystrokes, you could actually add a sentence that just sort of basically gave them the information, whether they were ready for a brochure today or not. So it's actually really helpful. From the health system and the state, we were trying to actually, once we sort of got going, we realized that Delaware being the size that it is, it was kind of silly for us to sort of hold in the things that we were doing to ourselves and to not sort of educate everybody else. And so we started first with the health system, but then we also very quickly realized we could disseminate this widely to the state. So with our health system, we do have a medical group that includes mostly, they're all employed practices, but they're not necessarily all academic practices. And so we wanted to sort of bring what we found to them and let them know that the program did exist and that it was an opportunity for them. And because they were in the state of Delaware, their patients too could benefit from the CMMI grant and be able to be referred in. And so it was actually really enlightening to be able to have the opportunity to present to them the project and realize that they didn't even know it existed for the most part. And so because we're so closely tied to community medicine in the department, we just sort of take things for granted. And it turns out that a lot of the practicing docs really didn't even have an awareness that it was an opportunity. And so it was really helpful to be able to sort of give them that information and sort of help link them to resources. We also did something called a focus on excellence, which at ChristianaCare, once a year, anyone who's doing a quality improvement or performance improvement project has the opportunity to pull the data together around their project and present it to the rest of the healthcare system, so not just the ambulatory practices, but also all those folks in the health system in general. And that information both gets hosted on a website, which is available for anyone to sort of read through and see, but it also gets presented in both hospital locations, so that people sort of come through and see what's going on. And a lot of people sort of use that as a kickoff place to get fired up about something that they may want to do that's actually happening somewhere else in the health system. And so we actually did this as our focus on excellence for this past year, so it's actually being presented as we speak at Christiana, which is very cool. And then from the state perspective, we used the fact that we are a relatively small state, and we have contacts both through the AMA and the Medical Society of Delaware to be able to write an article for the Delaware Medical Journal, but then also through the Delaware Academy of Family Physicians, since the vast majority of primary care in Delaware is provided by family physicians. that we would use our opportunity to be able to sort of promote also to them. And so we actually had articles in both journals, which actually got a lot of good feedback, enough that we decided to host a forum with the AMA, or the Medical Society, and DAFP, so that we actually brought together providers for a dinner meeting, where they actually got the opportunity to hear both from Omar and from the YMCA representative. And then we had a panel, similar to how we have here, where providers were able to sort of share their experiences, explain to them how we used it, explain what we did. And it was actually really well attended, and people really enjoyed hearing about it. So we actually got some outreach, even outside just our hospital system. And so that, the education, I think, out of all the things that we did, probably was the biggest push, because it sort of put it on people's radar. The number two one was the referral, but I could not tell you about the identification part because it seems silly. So the identification was pretty straightforward. So part of what the very first meeting that I ever had with Janet, and she said, we've got this paper-based thing, and I was like, I'm going to stop you there because I don't do paper. And we talked a lot about how can we make this work. And the answer was, well, can we figure out a way to pull out all these patients from the EMR and actually use the EMR for something helpful? And so what our practice has decided to do was to try piloting in the pilot, pulling out a retrospective from the chart, so actually using their criteria to pull the patients out and then to reach out to them without actually having to wait for them to come in for a visit or having to handle as little paper as possible. At the end of the day, it turned out we still ended up having to touch paper because we had to print things out and send them to the patients. But I'll show you more about what happened when we sort of sent out cold letters to people about their information. We also still did the paper-based approach. So we did have in the offices available the actual brochures and that had the application on them. But we also tried to actually make that paper-based process also electronic, in that we redeveloped the form itself into a PDF that was available on our SharePoint site. So our practices use sort of a clinical resource page that has sort of all the things that you might need during the visit, so that when you're in the EMR, you can easily click over to click the thing you want and print on demand, as opposed to having paper sitting around. Because in our practice, I tend to throw away paper that's sitting on counters pretty quickly. And so this way, you could print it on demand. It saved a lot of paper and saved a lot of issues. And so that was actually really helpful. And then patient self-identification. So I was surprised at the number of patients who, when we left their brochures and the information out in the waiting room, actually did the assessment themselves, either out of boredom or just curiosity, I don't know. But when they came up positive, they were bringing that up with their providers and asking to be referred. And we also had a pretty decent number of people who wanted to get their family member, who was also our patient, referred, who may not have been there that day, which was also a very interesting sort of take-home point. And then the referral process for us was sort of less about figuring out how to make the providers refer and more about reducing the barriers to getting the referrals to happen. And so this, again, was another paper process. So the way it was set up is it's very, what I would consider a complicated form, but mostly because it has little check boxes that required me having to look on multiple different screens in the EMR to fill out the form, which usually means I'm not going to fill it out. And so we were trying to figure out how to make it so that we would fill it out. And the easiest thing to do was to partner with our EMR folks to try to make it so that some of that data could be auto-populated into a form that kind of looked like their form. So it wasn't nearly as sexy as the one that they gave us. But it had the information already populated on it, and we got our YMCA to be willing to take it. And that by itself actually made it a lot easier for folks, because then you're sort of pulling it up inside their EMR. It gets you don't have to double document because it's already there. And then it's also pulling the current data. So if you're looking at, for example, the A1C is not there, you would know you could go ahead and order it. You didn't have to fill it out by hand and go do something different. And also you're able to auto fax from the EMR, so you didn't actually have to print something separate. So it just was all around a better process for us. And we did still have the referral forms available in the offices. We just put them at the nurse's station instead of in the exam room so that I didn't throw them away. And then we also had them available on SharePoint, too, so that was another thing that you could print off. So we basically had referral forms in multiple different formats all over the place so that you had it available to you. And in that electronic newsletter, the link to all of those things was every single newsletter. It was the same link. And then the other thing that I think can't be underestimated is the outside funding allowing the patients to participate at no cost. Because one of the things that we found out from the providers is that it wasn't that they weren't telling the patients about the program the first time that we introduced it to them. It was that the patients weren't able to pay the $400 or $500 that it costs to do the whole program. And even though it can be cost adjusted so that it can go down to $100 or $200, for some of them that $100 or $200 is just cost prohibitive and they weren't able to afford that. And so that piece, I can't underestimate to you how much that really made a difference. So we didn't make this a very rigorous study. We just wanted to make sure that we sort of hit the targets that we were looking for. That initial cohort, so when we did sort of all of the sort of crossing out all the people that we thought were appropriate, getting them down to who had the A1Cs but weren't already diabetic and who actually had Medicare and was active in their practice, we came up with 90 patients who seemed that they were appropriate for what we were trying to do. So we literally just cold sent them a letter. So the letter had, basically, we looked at your chart. It looks like you have prediabetes. Here's a diabetes report card that you've probably never seen because we didn't even realize you had pre-diabetes. Oh, by the way, we have some information for you about this YMCA program. We think you ought to do it. And if they didn't have a lab slip, oh, by the way, here's a lab slip. Could you go get this lab work done and call the office and make an appointment? So it was a pretty decent amount of stuff, but they had no idea it was coming. And so the PCPs knew that we were going to send them because we told them, and we did it out of the EMR, so it was documented in the EMR. But the patients had no idea this stuff was just going to show up at their office, at their house from the office. And so it was really kind of interesting. We didn't know how that was going to work, so we weren't sure if we were going to freak a lot of people out, make them very upset. And instead, it actually turned out that a fair number of them just went straight ahead and contacted the YMCA without ever needing to come into the office and talk to us one way or the other. And it was exciting because the ones that did come into the office, most of them converted over too. So once they came in, they just wanted to know, what is this pre-diabetes thing? And then once we sort of explained it to them in their visit, we were able to sort of move forward on the process, which is really nice. The cool part is that if you can get the person over the burden or over that hurdle from figuring out that they need to actually go to actually contacting the YMCA, they are incredibly great salespeople, and they were able to get almost everybody to sort of convert into starting the program. And once they got them into the program, they pretty much finished the program, which is really nice. And so even though the graph looks really awful, that's a 94 down to an 89.9. And so it's really not nearly as bad as I think. So we really thought, oh, okay, well, they'll show up for the first one, then they'll kind of blow it off. Turns out they really liked it, and they really enjoyed it, and they continue to go back. And so if you can get them past that initial stage of sort of tipping them over into starting, a lot of them stay, and a lot of them really like it. Because we just wanted to make sure we weren't sort of catching one glimmer of a thing and it sort of fell off, we actually didn't do anything else after that. So we did this one big ta-da, and then we went on to doing the other 15 quality improvement things that we were working on. And then just out of curiosity, we wanted to go back and look and see whether or not this is actually still working without us really doing anything else. And it turned out that from January to April, we actually still continued to have referrals, which 18 to me seems low. But when I think about the fact that we probably had less than one consistently, like before that, having done nothing else, not even having the diabetes educator doing anything else different, not ever mailing them anything else different, not doing another day or anything, we just sort of kept going. 18 people was still pretty good, and I was just shocked at how many people still enrolled. So once you referred them and they actually enrolled, to me that was actually really surprising. And it was also really exciting to see that the number of people who retained in the class has actually been consistent. What we don't have yet are data about how many people made it through the entire program, because by the time you finish, it's longer than the amount of time than we started. And so we don't know how many people made it all the way through to the very, very end. But honestly, I think if you make it through the first 10 sessions, the chances that you're going to finish are probably fairly high. The other thing that we don't yet have data about, but I can tell you just my personal patients that I've seen back in the office in the meantime, a fair number of them actually do get a benefit out of doing the exercise part, which I wasn't sure if they were going to buy into it. Part of the program allowed them to have access to the Y, which they didn't always have before. Many of them told me that they didn't even know that they had exercises they could do there, or that there was a pool there, and you could actually do stuff in the pool, which was different than what they thought you could do. And so it sort of opened up their eyes to having an opportunity to do something that I don't think they otherwise would have tried. And I'll be honest with you, I had never been in the Y before we started talking about this program, and I didn't know what they had to offer either. And so I always thought about it more like a gym and less like sort of all these other programs. So they really appreciated that group atmosphere, but then also the access to the actual machines and the programs, which is really helpful. So for us, our next steps are pretty straightforward. So the big one is Drift. So whenever I start something in the office, I know that by the time we're done, half the people won't remember that we ever even started in the first place. And so I suspect that this isn't going to be that much different, that if we don't really do anything else different, that even though the number went from, you know, a fairly decent number down to 18, it'll probably go back down to zero if we don't continue to do some type of marketing or keeping people engaged. And so that's important to me. It's also important to me to make sure that we're sort of still keeping it on the radar screen for the folks across the state, so that I think we still have a huge opportunity to help our fellow folks in the medical group, at a minimum, start to refer in, so that the vast majority of the referrals that are coming in are still coming from our two sites. And I think that we have senior centers and other practices where we could really be getting more bang for our buck if we really did a little bit more outreach. And so that's sort of on our radar screen. The second part to me is payment, because honestly, I really don't think the vast majority of the patients would have gone had they had to pay out of pocket for it. My hope is that now that it is included in the language of the actual recommendation, that there is a strong possibility that will be covered in and of itself, so the program under the ACA. And if that's the case, we find that most commercial payers pick up where Medicare and Medicaid sort of lead. And so if that's the case, we probably should be able to see this at least covered in some part. And if they do like they're doing for all other preventative services, it would be first dollar coverage, which would actually make it very similar to what we did in this project. And honestly, that was the largest barrier that I heard from patients. And so I'm hoping that that's true. The registry perspective is just sort of my own wish list. So one of the things that I found incredibly frustrating from a practice side was that when we sort of got through the first big shebang and we got all the things done, and we sit down to try to figure out, well, who do we need to recontact or who do we need to touch base with, having a registry would have been incredibly important and very helpful. We were still trying to do the Excel spreadsheet. Our EMR is not ready for a registry yet. And it turns out that that is incredibly hard to do when you're trying to track who actually showed up and who did what and who did where. There's just a lot to do, and so I'm hoping that in our new EMR that's coming in the next year, that we'll have a better ability to sort of track people and be able to sort of nitpick the right people at the right time so that we're not annoying people who've already signed up, but at the same time, we're not missing people who didn't. And one group that continuously I just remember over and over that we forget is that when we did our first project, there were, you know, it's a snapshot in time, but pre-diabetes is one of those tricky things where you may not be pre-diabetic today, but you gain 10 pounds over the Christmas holiday and you're pre-diabetic the next time I see you in the office. And so I'm sure there are people who we missed who would have benefited from the project because we just couldn't capture the fact that they now tipped over to pre-diabetes because they were on that borderline. And so it would be worthwhile being able to have a way that we could actually figure that out. And then the last part was expansion, which I've already mentioned to you, that we really do think it's important to have our medical group colleagues understand and sort of be willing to refer. But then I also think, just like we did with the Delaware Academy of Family Physicians and the Medical Society, getting this information out to a wider and wider range. And one of the things I'm excited about is that in February, the Medical Society of Delaware is doing another presentation about prediabetes and letting us sort of bring it back up again, talk about the new recommendations, remind them about the opportunities that are available in the state. And so I'm looking forward to having that opportunity. And so that's us, and that was our project, and I'd be happy to answer questions at the end as well.